How much time until we have alternative programs or certifications for leadership without having to attend college? I'm Sandra Gonzalez, and you're listening to Educa K-16 Podcast. Visit us at domasgroup.com, dumasgroup.com. Today we have Dr. Novoa Rios co-hosting with me and our special distinguished guest, Dr. Rosita Lopez.
Dr. Rosita Lopez has been a distinguished professor in the area of educational leadership and now throughout the country as a major speaker. She has been professor emerita at Northern Illinois University in the Chicago area. So it's a pleasure to have her with us today.
Welcome, and welcome to all our listeners in the North, East, West, and South of the United States of America. Here we are in 2021, and we're still searching for opportunities and communities for Latinx population. Dr. Novoa Rios, in 2 minutes or less, give our listeners the facts on how Latinx are part of the American tapestry in the United States. And by the way, before you start, let me put a plug in for your books. Dr. Novoa Rios has written, and you know, I'm his advocate here. These books are fantastic. He's written two books. This is book one, The Story of Latinos and Education in American History. Let me see if you can see it. Here we go. And the second book is Critical Issues of Latinos and Education in 21st Century America. Let's see, here we go. Where are we? And you can find those books in Amazon, and also go to abdinnoboa.com, abdinnoboa.com.
To go back to your question, thank you for the opportunity. In a nutshell, very, very quickly, Latinos have been with us for a long time. And as we say, which is interesting, it's not that we have passed over the border, but that the border passed over us. And what do I mean by that? It's not just a recent phenomenon. If we go back over 100 years, as a result of the Spanish-American War, Puerto Rico came into the United States. 50 years before that, in the mid-1800s, the Mexican-American War, and what happened? Again, Mexicanos at that time became part of the United States. As a result of the Mexican cessation, almost half of their entire territory at that time was ceded to the United States. Prior to that, another 50 years, 1803, the Louisiana Purchase. What we don't know and what we tend to forget in history is that most of the Louisiana Purchase was Latino, not French, because Spain had owned the Louisiana Purchase 3 years before it was sold by Napoleon to Thomas Jefferson in 1803. So, and we can go back and back and back. Latinos have been with us all the way through. Now, today, one out of every five Latinos, one out of every five Americans are Latinos. One out of every four, a little bit more, are public school students. And almost one out of every 3.5 children born yesterday are Hispanic. So the numbers keep growing. And it's not due to immigration, it is due to natural reproduction growth.
So if you just tuned in with us, we are Educa K-16, igniting a call to action to support policymakers, parents, students, to keep all students at the core of our decisions. So Dr. Abdinnoboa, let me sort of rephrase this. So it's not that Latinos have only been dying to come to the US, right? But Latinos are a part of the narrative of the tapestry as the fact that US has also overextended itself welcoming Latinx. So Dr. Novoa, from K-12 continuum to higher education, Latino enrollment is the lowest, as you well mentioned in your books, and with little leadership options for non-college degreed individuals.
Well, if we take the educational spectrum alone, from preschool all the way to PhD and master's degree, and we look at the Latino involvement in that area, given our numbers, it has not been par. It has not been as representative as it has been for other demographic, ethnic, minority, racial groups. So that if we take preschool as an example, enrollment in preschool for Latinos is lowest of all groups. If we take master's degree and PhDs, It is still lowest in terms of attainment rates. If we look everything else in the middle, the good news is that in college, it has recently changed. However, even though access is not as difficult as it was in the past, and we have fairly good representation, the dropout rate now at the college level is highest for Latinos than for any other group. And we are also clustered in very particular ways. For example, in two-year colleges, we have the greatest representation of any group. And in transfer rates, from two-year to four-year, we also have a very high dropout rate relative to other groups. And so on and on, but in a nutshell, in terms of what all this means, we are not equally represented in education at any particular level as yet. And this is not something recent. This has been something that has been going on for decades. And so it's important to recognize that we need to focus on Latino attainment because we are the future of this country demographically. And so as we go, so will the country.
So before you do the honors of introducing our distinguished guest, I want to make sure that I read what she wrote in your book. She wrote, "In a much needed and long awaited book, Dr. Novoa Rios has interwoven the most comprehensive tapestry of the Latino American quest to navigate success in American society, a historical gem certain to become the standard work in its field for many years to come." Abdeen, can you do the honors of introducing us to our distinguished guests?
It is a pleasure, and let me make it very simple and very straightforward and with full transparency. Several years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing Rosita, Dr. Lopez, as part of the research for my book, and primarily my second book, and heard the story that of her background and was intrigued very much by what she shared with me, which I think is very important for others to know. And that is that despite her high achievement in education, despite her multiple degrees, she was a high school dropout. And so the question is, how on earth can a high school dropout not only make it through high school, to leapfrog through high school, go into college, finish college, and then continue in higher education is spectacular. She represents probably, I can do my statistics on it, but it's close to 0.001% of the population of all Americans. That's amazing. And so the question, the burning issue, and I'm sure what our audience is dying to hear, is how on earth? What is it that happened? What is it that motivated her to go back to school and not only complete college, but go all the way and stick with it? And so to me, that was intriguing. And so her life story, her story is classic. And it's one that should be understood. And we need to learn more from people like her because she's an achiever. She's a leader. But look at how it began. And so there's hope for all of us, no matter what our background is.
I love it. There's hope. It's exciting. So Dr. Lopez, welcome. Let's speak to us a little bit about your journey.
So I think Dr. Novoa, Abdeen, my friend, my colega, I think he described it well. And it was a bumpy, difficult journey. And something that I'll share is, you really have to persevere. I think that's the word, perseverance. In spite of what you see around you, in spite of what people are telling you, and I mean all the way along the journey, my friends in the hood, in the neighborhood, and even my family, some family members, pretty much said, stay away from so much reading. It's gonna mess with your brain. Which I was hoping, yeah, that's the idea. Let it mess with my brain. I want my brain to grow and to learn things that I would have, that I honestly never learned in school because I went to school in the neighborhood. And one of the things that I've learned after being a professor for years and also looking at what's going on, the kids in the neighborhood don't always get the best education. And some of it's their own fault, and a lot of it is the school's curriculum that doesn't make any sense for the students that are in there. If it doesn't make sense to them, learning is just not going to happen. The engagement is gone. But I remember, you know, one, I was a single mom at that time. I had a son, and it really wasn't easy. And it's a choice that happens, sometimes not by choice, but it's a great thing. It was a blessing. But getting all the way to the top, along the road, if you know, it's the journey, right, that we're going to look at right now. If anybody thinks it's easy, no, it's not. But I promise it's not impossible. But I was told things like, you know, men do not like very smart women because they're not attractive. And I'm like, okay, thank you for your bit of research and advice, whatever, for whatever reason you're giving me that research. But it was a lot, and I grew up in the church. So that was even worse, because we were, to a certain extent, socialized to be very subservient to our men, or, and to a certain extent, be not only, partnership was what they said, but when you really looked at the outcome, the man was always going to be the person running things. And I just didn't see any men around me that I could say, yeah, I want you to run my life. No, that's not going to happen. So again, growing up in the church, being a single mom, that was really hard. And then you get to the university, and after 3 days of interviews and lots of questions, and the questions themselves were to make me run away. The questions were very, they were condescending. They were putting me in my place. I even remember at one time somebody said, you know, you're pretty, why are you doing all this? What? You know, again, and this is coming from an older man, probably, you know, I'm in my early 30s. He's probably in his 70s already and ready to retire, but he was on the interview team. And then in the hallway said, why are you doing this, right? And you're so pretty, you don't need this. And that was kind of, you know,
insulting.
It was beyond insulting, but it was kind of what I was exposed to a lot. And so once I did get the job as a professor, one of my colleagues who I had not met me in the hallway, and he said, you're the new hire. Thank God he didn't say you're the diversity hire. And he did say, you know, just so you know, you really don't belong here. You really have nothing to offer the academy. And I'm like, okay, did anybody hear that? As the echoes in the hallway. And I realized I could let all of this affect me. I could get really depressed. I could go into imposter syndrome 150%. I could just run away. I could go back, you know, to being a teacher in the city, which was wonderful. But it was time to move up and forward. And I remember getting a call one day from Cambridge University asking if I would come out and share my research on women, because I do women in leadership, specifically really looking at and focusing on women of different cultures, right? And I was really, wow. I mean, I couldn't breathe. And do you have these dates available? And I said, hold on, just to scream. I of course I had those dates available. I had nowhere to go. I was really in my very first year of being an assistant professor. And it was a lonely, lonely road. Going to England and presenting out there and meeting lots of different people, I really realized this is worth fighting for. This is worth sharing the news. This is worth being not a role model, but recruiting more women and brown people and black people and yellow people. But I needed to really bring in diversity. And it was, I kept looking at my son, And later on, I did marry and I had two more children. And I a lot of it was, I do a lot of this to show them that we can do this, right? That even though the whispers, and that's what's scary, when they whisper in your ear and nobody else hears it. And I had no one to share it with because, frankly, I was the only brown person there. And I was the only female that was brown in my program. After I got back from England, I got a call from the dean's office asking if I would be interested in running the department and becoming the program chair. I went, what? Wait, okay, what? And so after, you know, one of the things I've learned, got to negotiate. You don't just say, sure. First, what is it that you want? What is it that they're expecting of you? And what are you willing to really give? Because I had already in my mind said, I have to leave a big part of me for my children, for my family, and also my sanity. Because I remember a few months of me just thinking, I feel like I'm losing my sanity. I feel like I'm losing my identity. There was a little bit of time where I wanted so badly to be approved of by my colleagues. And I remember one of them saying to me, Rosita, you're nothing like us. And they would just, they would call the other men Dr. So-and-so. I was Rosita. And when I heard those words, you're nothing like us, I don't know what gave me the power to say, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that the best? My being like you adds no value to what we
do. I am so glad, Dr. Lopez, that you are who you are. If you just tuned in, we are Educa K-16, igniting a call to action to support policymakers, parents, all students, all stakeholders, to keep students at the core of their decisions. Here we are chatting today with Dr. Noboa Rios and Dr. Lopez. Dr. Lopez, a key word that stands out is perseverance. I mean, you grew up in the church, in the barrios, you grew up as a single mom, and you made it. And you went through all of these, you know, equity issues as you started climbing through, you know, your positions. Our listeners are now going to get some perspective from Abdin. Abdin, put it in perspective for our listeners. What Dr. Lopez is telling us, right? Put that in perspective.
Well, it's not unusual. It's fairly typical, unfortunately. There are a lot of stories like that, and we were not welcome every which way. And so we all had to individually struggle, and we all have our individual stories in that process. It has not gotten all that much better. In the research that I have done, there are many, many stories like that at a different level, in a different way, but it's the same bottom line. And so the educational trajectory is one way of success. It's one way of leadership. And what I would like to ask Rosita is, beyond the higher education spectrum area success, is there another way for leadership that does not require higher education or requires post-secondary education in a different way? What are the options that we have? Do we all have to go to higher education and go to college?
No, absolutely not. It is my go-to. Is, and one of the things I told my children always was, education is not an option, it's an absolute. I'm not giving you a choice. You have to find a way to be good at doing something, whether it be working with your hands, being a great cook. And my son always would tell me, Mom, I wanna work at McDonald's. And I would always say to him, great, how about if you own a few McDonald's? And so, you know, he was only five and he's like, but can I work there? I go, you can work at every single one of the McDonald's that you own. So what I was subliminally trying to put was, I want you to dream that dream, but I want you to dream it as high as you can. But it wasn't just through going to a university. Universities are not for everyone. And to be quite honest, sometimes going to higher education can be something that is overwhelming. It could be cold, it could be boring, it could not be tapping into the talents that, that our young people have that they really want to do. I'll give you an example. My nephew, he loves playing music. He hated going to school. So we kind of forced him to go to school. And of course, I made sure he went to Northern Illinois University. A great musician, not a great student. So he I don't know what happened. In his third year, he decides to drop out because he got an offer to work with Ramsey Lewis. Well, Ramsey Lewis is one of the greatest jazz composers. This guy's a radio personality. And this kid gets an opportunity to, work with Ramsey Lewis. Well, here's one thing that Ramsey, God bless him, he said, you got to have some kind of education. So my nephew decides just to finish his credits only so he could work with Ramsey Lewis, which he did for over 15 years. Ramsey's semi-retired now. And my nephew has decided to go into teaching. He's a great musician. He is so powerful. He has traveled the world. He has played in every part of the of any place that you can think of, places where no English language is spoken, including Russia. He has played in Russia. And now he's going to teach youngsters to love music. So it isn't about pursuing your dreams this way, that way, or whatever. It's about doing what you love, but reaching a potential that you would otherwise reach if you didn't have some of the education needed to be really good at that. No great restaurant will hire you unless you have what it is you need to be the very best. One of the things I've learned, I will never stop learning. So never, never, never. And a lot of people say, well, now that I am retired. I still work with students. I do dissertations with students. I do presentations around the world virtually like today. But one of the things is be the best at what you do and love what you do first and foremost. Because when you go into something without loving it, you're not a lot of fun to be around. Persevere, but also diversify. So Josh is a great musician. Now he's going to be a teacher. He has to go back and get his teaching credentials. In the meantime, he's being hired as it's not a substitute, but it's something like that while he completes this work. He's very excited. All of this during COVID, right? So he's reinventing himself. This is a great opportunity for you to seek whatever it is that you love, but be the best at it. Be so good. I mentioned to Sandra earlier, before we started, that I used to do autopsies. So I was in school in pre-med at University of Illinois, and I worked at a hospital and I did autopsies during that time. It was great money. It was nice and quiet. I could study. Nobody bothered me. It was very dead. Okay, sorry. Okay, that's not funny. But it was it was very quiet, very dead. And one of the things that I'm glad about is that I had that experience to work in hospitals, in emergency room, with geriatrics, autopsies, and all of that. Well, I teach at a university leadership for many years. I serve on, community activities, boards, and things like that. What it taught me is don't just be single-minded. Expand, work at a restaurant, find out what it feels like to talk to people that maybe you don't even want to serve. Rude people, kind people, generous people. Learn what you don't know. And you can't just do that by reading a book. Although reading a book is a great start and it's a great way to, educate yourself, experience. And so sometimes your best education comes from life experience.
I totally agree, Rosita. Yeah. Dr. Lopez, I mean, that was my path. I went to college straight out of high school And I actually left college in my second year of college because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I went into the restaurant business. I was a waitress, bartender. I became a manager. I did that for so many years. And I decided, you know what? No, I need to go back. I need to get my degree. And then I got 3 degrees, right? It was like, oh, no. And I'm a woman, Latina? No, I have to continue, right? So I understand where you're coming from. So you've already answered parts of my next question, but what do we need to do? What's your recommendation to parents, to policymakers, and to students listening right now? So it's, you have 3 different audiences, right? So if you wanted to say something to the policymakers to include Latinx representation, or what do you say to parents to motivate their children? And what do you say to students? And I think you've spoken to students a little bit in your don't give up and you know, go and find the experience that you're looking for, et cetera. But what's your messaging on leadership and Latinx representation?
Well, leadership starts very young by being given responsibilities. When I was growing up, it was you're in charge of cleaning the board. We used to have blackboards with chalk, and it was an it was such an honor to clean the board because you got a chance to do something different, right? In anything that you are given a responsibility to do, that's something out of the norm. It's kind of a privilege to serve. So to parents, I say, make sure that you give, you know, certain responsibilities and trust the your children with these responsibilities, and then show them. Here's ways that you can help the family. We used to lick the envelopes for my dad and put the stamps on the bills, and we were part of paying the bills, and we learned something about that, okay? So, you know, you start very young, and don't, you know, say, I love the way you did this. I love the way that you completed that. And maybe for the next time, you might also want to. So, you know, you give some feedback, but don't do it in a way that's going to be hurtful, because they'll run away. Kids will be discouraged that they didn't do a good job, that they didn't live up to what you wanted. And then in school, when children are in school, there's committees, there's groups, there's dance, there's you know, journalism. There's all kinds of things that it's extracurricular stuff, right? Sports, whatever. Those are all places where, what do we learn? Teamwork, we learn rules, we learn discipline. And so those are, when we want to increase representation, we have to be there, you have to show up. You can't give a lot of excuses as to why you couldn't make it or why you were late. That only works once. Once you are, you know, nope, unreliable. Don't ever get that stamped unreliable, because you will not be called on when there is an opportunity to do something really exciting that you might want to be part of. The other thing is, and something that we started in our own community center at Casa Central, one of the largest Hispanic serving organizations in the country, we started a junior board. We're bringing in millennials, and they work with the senior board, but what we're doing is cultivating our future leaders in serving on boards, right? Corporations. And what do I say to policymakers and corporations, organizations? Make sure you have a diverse board, that you have, you know, representation of Latinos, of African-American, of Asian, whatever. You don't want to have a single-minded kind of board rubber stamping. That will never do you well. You will lose. And so for young people, I recruit young people to boards. I've been a board chair for many, many years at CASA. I just gave the gavel over, and now they said you got to stay as a vice chair. I said, okay, I really need a break, but I love doing it. And it's about mentoring others. If you've reached, mentor others to get there. It's not an easy journey, but we can make it better for them, because we've been through some of that. As you said, Sandra, you went into restaurant, you learned a lot of great skills that I can see evident in your who you are. You have a presence, and you're very sure of yourself. Abdeen, the same thing. These things happen because you're out there doing things that you probably didn't plan on doing. And then you decided, let me put some, you know, some strength behind what I have. A degree is always a great thing, but I have met many people who have degrees that have done nothing with them. And it's a shame. And in my own graduate courses, I see very little brown and black representation there. And we have grown that over the 20 plus years that I have worked there. When I started there, it was impossible. And to even get people to come out to the cornfields in DeKalb. But the good news is they're there, they're presente. And now the pandemic opened up something else, virtual. You don't have to drive anywhere. You show up on your computer. Now you just got to learn how to do it. So I spent a lot of time learning from millennials and having, you know, they teach me, hey, don't do this, don't do that. And I'm sure if they watch this, they'll say, you did it. I told you not to do that. But the good news is we teach each other and they love teaching us. We have to listen. So parents, listen to your kids too. They have a lot to teach us about things that we may not be aware of. And it's a good way to find out what they are thinking. And we can actually tap into that. That's a way for us, a roadmap, if you will, to help them be the very best at what they do. I have three children. One in, he's a VP at a bank, but he only does organizations and industry. He doesn't do people. And then I have a daughter who's a principal at a school now, a high school. And I have a son who's in finance. Let me take that back. He's recruiting high level CEOs for top positions, but his background is finance. And now he's learning coding. Each one is so different. One size fits no one. It really doesn't work. It really is very few. And I look at these three of my own, and I can tell you they were each so very different, and yet they fit so beautifully into this tapestry called familia, right? My three grandchildren, completely different. And one of them are identical twins, totally opposite. They're 15, they've already decided I'm going in health. And the other one, she's decided she's gonna go into, she said something. It was something to do with like welcoming or something with hotels and things like that. Whatever it is, it's what they're interested in right now. What they choose eventually, we'll see. And then my youngest grandchild, who's will be 8 years old tomorrow, he is a scientist. He doesn't want to be a scientist. He has already told us, I am a scientist. And that was like, do we hear what he's saying? So, I mean, we are all for making your dreams happen, but we also have to understand each dream may be very different from the other. But it all comes together. Not everybody, like we said, not everybody will go to universities, but we can't live without the vocational education people who know how to fix engines and who know how to build things that we couldn't do with our college education, right? Which I am so happy about having reached, and I gotta tell you, I was giving birth to my last child who's 29 years old now. My oldest is 44. And
you don't look like you have a 44 year old, by the way. You look 44.
Oh, thank you very much. it's the Puerto Rican genetics. It's olive oil.
So right? on let's bring it home, Dr. Noboa, in reference to your books, what Dr. Lopez is telling us, you know, we have to stay open-minded. We have to look at the experiences. They count, they matter. Policymakers, organizations, you have to be inclusive of diverse individuals in your organizations and mentor others. Dr. Noboa, bring it home to us. Close it. How does what Dr. Lopez is talking about in reference to your books, can you connection?
It's about education with a capital E. Education comes in many forms. We cannot lose sight of success by way of education, but education is not necessarily just schooling or one type of schooling. It's for life success. And I heard many options to success. Leadership also starts with the very young, at a very young age. The whole process of mentoring is extremely important. Perseverance is key. Diversify. I heard also love what you do and being good, about being good. Everybody wants to be good. And if you're not, you'll find something to be good at. But that has a lot to do with self-centeredness also, and being able to be happy and proud of who you are and what you are. And so to me, don't be single-minded. And these are all quick notes that I just took in terms of listening to Rosita. And all of this fits into what we call education. So we don't want to put it in any one category. It's all inclusive. And if we move with that frame of mind, I think we're about having success and being happy and proud of that success.
Yeah, following your purpose, right? And living through the journey with that happiness that you're talking about. I am Sandra Gonzalez, and you're listening to Educa K16. Visit us at DOMASGROUP, dumasgroup.com. Stay tuned next week as we continue this call to action, raising awareness how the future of America is interrelated to the future of the Latinx student. Dr. Novoa, let's invite other guest speakers, because I loved having Dr. Lopez today. Who should we invite for our next Educa episode?
I'm going to leave that as suspense for our listeners, but we have a good number of others. In fact, I have a list of about 110 people, and I haven't contacted all of the 110, but all of whom I have talked to before for my book. So I know that they would be very willing partners in this endeavor. So we're going to take it step by step in terms of broadening what it is that we're talking about when it talks to, when it refers to Latino success and Latino inclusion in the leadership of this country.
And notice Dr. Novoa says Latino, I say Latinx. We already had that discussion. Go back to episode one. We talked about that. But listen next week as we continue to provide a wider perspective in higher education for Latinx, Latino students.
Or Hispanos, Hispanics.
Hispanics. A big thank you to Dr. Lopez. Thank you so much for taking your time and being here with us. Thank you. And Dr. Novoa Rios, thank you so much for being co-host. I can't wait for next week's episode. Stay tuned, listeners.
Hasta pronto.
Gracias.
Gracias.